This episode is brought to you by Audible Audiobooks. With over 150,000 professionally performed audiobooks to choose from, Audible truly offers something of value for everyone. Check out audible.com/truckertom for your free audiobook today. Tango Tango Papa 1778, September 30th, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Cheyenne, Wyoming. And so I was out in Utah. So I ended up picking a load up today at Salt Lake City. And then that load, delivers to Walton, Kentucky. That's suburban Cincinnati, Ohio, on the Kentucky side. So in any case, another kind of a tight load, so I was able to make it here, and so I've got about basically two more legs of driving that are going to be pretty close to 11 hours apiece, and give or take a little bit, and I can't give a little bit. They're either 11 hours or less. they're not going to be more. Should be able to make it just fine. So the load delivers on the 3rd at 10 a.m. in the morning at a cold storage there in Walton, Kentucky. That's just south of Cincinnati. So before I go on, go ahead and talk a little bit about Audible. So I don't forget to talk about it. But as you know, I've been a long-time Audible subscriber, and one of the great things about Audible, there's many great things about it actually, but one of the great things, and the thing that has kept me remaining a subscriber, is that they've got all of these different books. They're all professionally read, really performances. They're really professionally performed. You know, you think, well, it would be easy to read an audiobook. Well, I'm telling you, it's not. It's not an easy thing. And if you don't believe me, I've mentioned it before. There's an app that you can get that basically you can put on your Android or your iOS device that, where these people have these public domain. You can also do it on a computer. There's a website. These public domain books. And so the volunteers read these books. And some of them actually aren't bad. Some of the volunteers that are reading these various books aren't bad, but then there are others. I think it's LibriVox is what the name of it is. But many of them, the recordings are just really poor quality. And, people have really sometimes, unfortunately, they have kind of annoying accents, or maybe even annoying voices, and sometimes they're just not doing it in a professional way. Of course, it's all volunteer, so what do you expect? But that just kind of serves as a contrast point. The reason I mention it is it serves as a sharp contrast to Audible. Audible, everything is professional. And it's the people that read the books, the book readers, are top-notch. And It's unfortunate when you have a really interesting book, if the book reader, the person reading the book, kind of becomes an issue and sort of gets in the way of the book, then you can't really, you have a harder time getting enjoyment or information out of the book. And if you have someone that's really professional, like all of the people that Audible employs, or I don't know that Audible employs them, but somebody employs them. They're, you know, Audible only has professionally read stuff on there that I've ever found. The many audiobooks that I've collected so far. If you have someone that's really a real professional doing the reading job, then they're able to to convey the book to you in a really efficient fashion, and the reader themselves, you know, doesn't end up kind of getting in the way and kind of becoming an issue. And so it's that, just that aspect alone is very important. But then you take that into account, kind of take that for granted, actually, that they've got professional readers. Audible has, as I say, they have over 150,000 audiobooks available to choose from. And, you know, a tremendous number, you know, fiction, nonfiction, all kinds of different topics. And as I've said before, I love to kind of peruse through there, and they've always got new titles that are coming online, and I love to peruse on there and find things that are just that I know that I would be interested in. And of course, they also on the website they have it set up so you can listen to samples. You can listen to samples of each one of these audiobooks, and that's great because you can find out, well, is this really something that sounds like I'd be interested in? So I'm able to kind of use Audible to kind of satisfy my own curiosity about the world. And so you can do the same thing, but get a free audiobook. If you go to audible.com/truckertom, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial and get one free audiobook and give it a try. I signed up for Audible several years ago, and as I say, I've stuck with it. I really do derive a lot of enjoyment and knowledge out of Audible. It's really quite amazing. So audible.com/truckertom. So speaking of Audible and audiobooks, you know, I've mentioned it a lot lately. I've been listening to these audiobooks about Hitler Germany, and you know, there's three of them. The first one was The Coming of the Third Reich, and then the second one was The Third Reich in Power, and now I'm listening to the third one, The Third Reich at War. And we're taught so pitifully little about Nazi Germany. We hear all the cliche things, and we think we see the problem is, you know, it's like someone sitting and watching CNN, or they're sitting there and watching Fox, and maybe they're flipping channels, and they think that they're getting a variety, when in fact they're not. You can end up, because they repeat those stories, even on Fox, you know, they repeat those stories over and over and over and over again. And you can, after a few hours of that, you can come away with this idea that you know all the stuff that's going on. And part of it's because they keep repeating things. And so, the same thing happens. In a larger sense, same thing happens. You think you know about Nazi Germany. You think you know kind of the history of it and what went on. Well, I'm telling you, you don't. Unless you've specifically kind of read about it and sought information about it, you really don't know what happened. You think you know. and it's just the stuff that other people have repeated. Maybe you've repeated some of it yourself, and you know, in a knowing way. So it's really apparent to me that the people in our current government, it is really clear they have studied Nazi Germany. They have studied what worked in Nazi Germany. You know, the propaganda. How Nazi Germany was able to conquer its enemies. You know, how it was able to manipulate public opinion, its own public opinion. How it was able to really destroy its enemies. You know, both internal and external. And you would never know that. I would never know that had I not been curious. And had I not had the opportunity via Audible to satisfy that curiosity. But, again, people are complaining about the politics and so on and so forth. And, you know, and I know people, the same people that are complaining to me, I know they get tired of me saying it, but I'll say it again, you know, we deserve the politics that we're getting. The real problem is that our morals have sunk in the sewer. When the morals go in the sewer, the government follows. There's just a little lag time. You know, we've had this idea that we can turn the morals around by some political process. You can't. It can't be done. And so there's no point in wasting your time caring about it. At this point, I just don't care about politics anymore. Of course, it's rotten and so on and so forth. But the problem is us. We're trying to focus on politics. We're focused on the wrong thing. We're focused on the effect and not the cause. The cause of our problems is our moral depravity. And unless and until that moral depravity is addressed in a meaningful way, the political thing is just going to get worse and worse and worse. So, anyway, I've got some audio comments from Joel McLaughlin. He still does a Life in Ohio podcast and some other podcasts he'll mention in his file. And then Michael Moss, who's also a podcaster and a storm chaser. I don't know if is what was I going to say? Mind went blank there. Before I go on, I wanted to mention, I had subscribed to this service. It's called Next Issue, and I don't remember how much it is a month. It's a fixed rate. It would be similar to subscribing to a magazine or two. You pay this fixed rate fee and you get access to like 84 magazines. And so I signed up for that, and I actually like the service, and so I've picked a number of different magazines, and it notifies me when the new issue comes in, and so on and so forth. So there's this magazine called Fast Company. Now, maybe I had heard of it before, but it's very interesting. The way they seem to do it, they pick a topic for each month's magazine, and then they have different articles about it. And so the latest issue of Fast Company magazine, that I finished reading yesterday, it was about design. And they had some very interesting articles about a recent history of design, and how design affects companies and affects, and then they had a large article about Apple and Apple's design philosophy and so on and so forth, and sort of a history of Apple. And then they had this interesting article about Google. And so in the past, I don't know if people have noticed, but in the past, especially the past couple of years, Google has started paying attention to design, because before, Google really ignored design. At Google, everything was about the engineering, and they ignored design. And so now what they're doing, at the direction of Larry Page, what they're doing is they're paying attention to design at this point. And, so they're continually improving the design of things, the design of their products, the design, they try to keep things simple, of course, because Google's sort of known for simplicity, but they're also trying to really pay attention to designing things, because it's important that things work on the back end, and what Google has done on the back end with a lot of things is really incredible. The engineering is amazing. But they're also now focusing on design, and you can see that. You can see it in Android. You can see it on their, if you go to Google.com, there's been some subtle changes to that. Your Gmail, they've sort of redesigned that, and especially over the last couple of years. And some of the stuff is subtle, but they really have kind of focused on design, and they're continuing to kind of focus on it. And Fast Company, this latest issue of Fast Company, I read through the whole thing yesterday, and kind of enjoyed that issue. And so, I've got other things that I'll go through, popular science and so on and so forth, and some of the car magazines once in a while I'll read through those. And so I'm kind of still enjoying this next issue, and I'm I've have it on my iPad, and it really the iPad, the regular iPad, is a nice size for magazines. Anything really smaller than that, magazines don't work as well. Like on the Nexus, magazines don't work very well, but at least there is a Next Issue app for Android, but it kind of sucks. I have, the last time I looked at it, the Next Issue app for Android leaves a lot to be desired, but the one for iOS is actually quite functional. And since I have an iPad, an iPad 2, then that's the one I'm reading the Next Issue magazines on. So I'm continuing to enjoy that. But I wanted to mention that because Google is kind of paying attention to design. Apple's not the only one now. So, as I say, they had a rather lengthy article about Apple and sort of a history of Apple and design and so forth. And, this schemorphism that, the idea that you made the different elements of the operating system sort of resemble real world things, and now they're with iOS 7, they're sort of making everything flat. you know, and they were saying that the skeuomorphism really was Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs sort of was behind the skeuomorphism, you know, even though other people kind of got blamed for it. So, but it's interesting because even, you know, Windows, you know, the Windows 8 and the so-called the Metro interface is pretty, you know, it's flat, quote-unquote flat, as well as Android. Android, you know, is kind of a flat design too. And so it's kind of interesting that all of a sudden Apple is jumping on the flat, so-called flat design bandwagon after Microsoft and after Google did it. And nobody's really saying much, you know, the really, you know, apart from just noticing, well, yo, look, Apple went to the flat design. That's the new thing, is the flat design. You know, and they're not, people really aren't saying too much, you know, that, well, Microsoft did it first. Microsoft and Google did it first. You know, why is Apple just now jumping on the bandwagon? You know, so. But, so anyway, very interesting article about, you know, about Apple and so on and so forth, and just kind of little tidbits of how the place worked in large part. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Michael Moss. He's got a comment here that's, or he's asking a couple of questions. It's about 2 minutes and 56 seconds, so here is Michael.
Here's some here for the podcast, so Tom. As you know, I am a storm chaser, and I'm finishing up my 13th year of doing this. And the one thing that I've noticed that's becoming more of a problem, and this is where the question comes to you, one of the problems that I've noticed with the advent of a lot of storm chasers, particularly once you get down into Oklahoma, North Texas, into Kansas, Nebraska, that area, and you get a major, and sometimes not even a major severe weather day, and you have lots and lots of chasers converging on every storm, supercell storm that develops, and in some cases it gets to the point where there's traffic jams even in these major metropolitan areas. So my question to you, two questions. Number one, have you ever been delayed by any of these traffic jams during severe weather?
Okay, I'm going to stop that and answer it. And no, I have not. Now that's not saying, you know, I'm not counting snow. Now I've had to slow down, obviously, going through intense rain and certainly snow, you know, and road conditions can create trouble, you know, where you have to slow down or maybe even stop. And so I have had to stop because the road was closed, and I've stopped because, you know, I just felt unsafe, you know. So the best thing to do if I feel unsafe, if the road's too slick or whatever, I stop. But I think your question is more of a, you know, because I saw this video on, there's a video on YouTube from a few months ago, you know, when they were having these really intense storms, you know, I think maybe it was a tornado in Oklahoma City, you know, and you had the traffic probably on Interstate 40, this massive traffic jam, and you could see the tornado up in the distance, you know, and somebody's recording from their vehicle, you know, maybe they had a dash cam or something. Or maybe it's just their smartphone, but they were recording, and so that here there's this massive traffic jam on a freeway. You know, we're all real familiar with those. If you live in a city, you know what a freeway traffic jam is, or you drive through one very often. You know what it is, but yet here was the, you know, this tornado in the distance. So Never been caught in that. I suspect that's what you're kind of asking about. But fortunately, I've never been caught in that. There's been a few times where I've driven along and the sky, you know, often, you know, like on the side, will really look pretty bleak, you know, like something could happen. And I've been in a few situations like that where it was maybe just a few miles away, but driving along and you think, probably better just keep going and get out of here. But if I was driving into something like that, then I would probably think twice, especially if I thought it could be a tornado. But I do drive into intense rain, and then I slow down for that. But I've never been caught in a traffic jam where there's a tornado. You can clearly see some sort of tornado up ahead. Never been caught in that sort of situation. I suspect that's what you're asking me.
And the second question, the second question that I have, that is, if one of these backups over you were just driving along and you incurred some type of damage from severe weather, or better yet, if there was a tornado coming at you, would you abandon your truck, and then if your truck gets hit, you just have to call it in and the company takes it from there? How does that work when you have damage or even a destroyed truck while driving the road that's weather related? And I guess you could throw other phenomena in there as well. If you had the road cave because of an earthquake, or if you had or flash flooding. Be interested to know if that's ever happened to you. Have you ever gotten in a hairy situation in your truck with severe weather? Now, I know you've seen a tornado at least one time in your life when you lived in Kansas. But what about what you've experienced on there on the road? Of course, you had that beautiful ice storm that you had down close to your house years ago. It'd be interesting to hear about all that.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael. So as you were talking there, I was beginning to think, you're a storm chaser and so on and so forth. And I'm sort of an involuntary storm chaser at times. I'm not really chasing the storms, but maybe inadvertently. I don't know, if there was a tornado and I could actually see, what it was, or of course now they have the cell phone alerts that come right across and tell you to take cover. That can happen now. So if that were to happen, I don't know, would I pull off on the side of the road, because it would just really depend on the tornado, I suppose, or what I thought it looked like. I don't think I would abandon the truck, because if, let's face it, if I have to pull off on the side of the road, I'm probably better off remaining in the truck than I would be, and I don't know, maybe there's protocols for this, because they tell you to get out and lay down in a ditch or whatever, and I don't know how safe one would be in a ditch. Maybe you can answer this. Would you be safer in a ditch than you would be to remain in your vehicle? Maybe you would be, but so I don't know if maybe if if it was safer to get in a ditch, maybe that's what I would do. But I don't know. I would just, if the truck gets damaged, of course, I would end up calling them and telling them, what happened. If it got damaged by a tornado, or if it was parked in a truck stop, as that has happened before, people can be parked in a truck stop and then all of a sudden, here comes the tornado. That if you remember when was, oh, I don't know. It was, it's been more than a year ago down in Dallas. You remember seeing the Schneider trailer that was 300 feet in the air. Well, that Schneider yard is right next door. I mean, right next door to a Flying J truck stop there in South Dallas. And I'm sure that if you go back and read the articles, some of the trucks got damaged maybe in the truck stop. But that, you know, it, mostly it seemed that was Schneider that, you know, you saw the pictures where they, some of the trailers got, became airborne, and then other ones were just sort of smashed together. And so it's very possible that, you know, you could be parked somewhere and then it comes along and gets you. So, but I've heard, you know, you hear stories that somebody can be driving along and then all of a sudden the tornado gets them, or they can pull off on the side of the road and the tornado gets them, or, so I don't know, but you could tell me, if I were to see a tornado and I could see that maybe I'd better stop, what would I be better off just jumping out of the truck and getting in, you know, kind of maybe getting in a ditch away from the truck? Because, you know, it's always possible that if I was too close to the truck, that if the tornado did pick the truck up or blow it around, that it might land on me in the ditch. So, I don't know. I don't know exactly what I would do. I've never been in exactly that type of situation. I've been, you know, in some pretty intense rain and, you know, where the wind's blowing and what have you. But I've never been in a situation where I could see a tornado from the truck. I've never been in that sort of situation where I was really sort of knowingly in close proximity to a tornado in the truck. So, I don't know. I guess, I would play it by ear, and just if the thing gets damaged, then you call it in and tell them. But otherwise, if it's normal, like snow or, you know, that type of thing, then if I feel unsafe, or if the road's, you know, the road could be closed, if, you know, then you call the company and just, I'd call the company and just say, hey, you know, road's closed, sorry, or I don't feel safe, can't drive, gonna have to reschedule, then it's up, you know, because it's up to the driver to decide whether it's safe or not. That's, you know, it's not up to the company, it's up to the driver. And so that's the most likely situation, you know, that I encounter is, you know, problems with snow-covered roads, that type of thing. But as far as atmospheric stuff, as I say, I've never seen a tornado from a truck. And hopefully I won't. So anyway, thank you, Michael. So I've got a comment here from Joel, and then I normally, you know, I try not to respond on Voxer to the comments, because then a whole conversation starts, and it's better to try to contain that for the podcast. But I did respond to Joel's comment, and then he sent some comments back, and but I'm going to go ahead and just play this first comment from Joel, and then probably start it to kind of respond. So here is Joel.
Morning, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here from Linux Link Tech Show and various other podcasts. I was listening to your show where you're doing your stop start on the messages from I forget who his name was, but...
Let me interrupt. It was Jeremy that you're talking about there.
Regarding Windows Surface RT and Windows 8 in general. I think some of the biggest problems with Windows 8 is that Microsoft has always had this great wish that all their platforms, be they the Xbox, the PC, the server, everything runs the same operating system at its core. And the biggest problem with that is that each interface, whether it be it the server, the desktop, your phones, whatever, they have their, basically each one has different use cases or uses. Your phone, they want a nice you want a nice touchscreen display. You want apps that have big spaces for your fingers or a stylus, whatever, it doesn't matter. All right, that's one interface. Another one was is the desktop, which is very much like Windows 7. That's what we like. That's what works. We know that works. The next after that would be a tablet. And a tablet is very much like a phone. It's just a bigger version of the phone. The interface itself needs to flow and work better. When you're on the bigger tablet display, it needs to give you that space, let you use that space in a way that's different than the desktop and the phone.
Okay, let me go ahead and interrupt. What it has evolved into, handheld devices, tablets, smartphones, that as we currently know them, what they do and why they're popular now is because they take, you have these apps, and what a good app does, the app is the content on a tablet or a smartphone, and what a good app does, it takes the, sort of the most important elements that make up a specific task, and it kind of condenses it and makes it more efficient to actually do that task in the app than it would be doing it on a desktop computer. Now, I go back to the example that I've given several times of my bank. My bank has an iOS app and they've got an Android app, and the apps are functionally identical in the way that they work, either on Android or iOS. But they've concentrated all of the features that I need, the most important features, and it's actually much more efficient and faster and a more pleasant experience for me to just pick up my phone or whatever device, put in my, start the app up, put in my password, and I'm in my account. I'm looking at what has cleared, any deposits that came in, what's going on with my savings account, transfer money between accounts if I want to, etc., 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 and I can do that incredibly quickly with a device that fits in my pocket. It's amazing. And I can do it faster and far more efficiently than I can on this computer that I'm recording the podcast on. It's easier. The device, the app, makes it easier. The app kind of concentrates it and makes it easier. And so that's really what an app does. A good app takes functionality that you could do with a computer. It takes functionality and it kind of concentrates the very best elements of it and presents it to you in such a way that it's more efficient to do it on that handheld device, whether it's a phone or an iPad or whatever, than it would be doing it on a conventional desktop or laptop computer. So that's the, you know, what a tablet, you know, that a tablet, you know, because they've tried tablet computers, as I said in the last podcast, they've tried to push those for years. Microsoft is, you know, tablet computer and is going to have a stylus and so on and so forth, and we're going to run regular Windows on it. And it just didn't work. Apple, you know, Apple's tried the, you know, the PDAs, you know, the type of thing in the past too. They didn't have it right then either. You know, and you had Palm devices, and, you know, so there's been a long history of these devices, but they just didn't have the right idea yet. Maybe the technology wasn't quite there yet either. So, a device like an iPad or a Nexus or a smartphone, like this Galaxy S3 that I have, or an iPhone, those have certain uses. And when you get down to screen size, each one of those devices that I just named, I'm finding lend themselves to certain uses that are kind of separate. They sort of separate themselves from the other handheld devices. So, for example, I use my phone for certain tasks, and I tend to use the Nexus for certain tasks, and now I'm, you know, I tend to use the iPad for certain tasks, and then, you know, even the iPod fourth generation that I have, the iPod Touch, I use it for a few things. Now, there is overlap. Some of the things I can, you know, I might do on each one of those devices, I can do on all of them, whichever one I might have in my hand. But for the most part, the different sizes of device sort of lend them, and styles of device sort of lend themselves to different tasks. And that is why these devices, you know, it's a new category of device. It's not simply a computer with a, you know, with some kind of a touch interface. And any company that doesn't realize that the apps themselves are the content, you know, and you design the operating system to sort of get out of the way of the apps really are the content. Any company that tries to push something different than that is barking up the wrong tree. So anyway, I just want to reiterate that these handheld devices, it really is all about the apps. And the operating system itself should just get out of the way and enable, you know, and enable the end user to really take advantage of the apps.
Although it's the phone in the lesser case. All right. You know, that's part of the issue. The next is they got to realize that you can run the same kernel on each system if it's designed efficiently enough. The Linux kernel, which is what is the basis of Android, that has been known to run on anything from a mainframe all the way to a server. It scales well. The Microsoft one, not so much. When you think about some of the other attempts that they've had, you know, think about Windows CE. Remember the, I think it was an AudioVox phone that you had that had the slide-out keyboard and the stylus. I don't know if you had that one or not. I know you had a couple HTC phones that were like that, but the whole thing is you can't, you know, you can't take the same interface and shoehorn it in to make it work for everything. If Microsoft would take Windows 9 or Windows 8.5 or whatever they're going to call the next version after 8.1 and just make a complete separation between the two, I think the Windows kernel now is getting lean enough that they can actually do some of what they want to do, but they have to provide only one interface. Windows 8 providing two interfaces is the biggest, massive mistake they've ever made, and it could undo their company.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Yeah, you know, and even if Microsoft can, you know, the Windows 8, let's say, or, you know, I guess starting with Windows 7, they started really making the thing more lean and what have you. And so, what if, you know, they get it really lean and it could run on a phone? Well, the problem is, you know, they want, you know, they've got this silly Metro thing and, you know, and I guess some people kind of like the Windows phone and the way the thing works or whatever, but it's all about the apps in the end. You know, and the operating system should just get out of the way. It can be pretty and it should be designed well and so on and so forth, but it should just get out of the way, and it's all about the apps. And of course, I don't care, you know, how nice they make the Windows phone or you know, these Microsoft tablet devices. I've had such bad trouble in the past with Microsoft that I would not buy another Microsoft device because, I had two Windows phones, and they were fine for the time, I suppose, because that was sort of pre-iPhone, and you know, that the iPhone sort of changed it, the paradigm. But those, you know, the Windows phones that I had, you know, kind of looking back, it was sort of clunky. You know, and it was clearly designed to, you know, both of those, they sort of, you know, the earlier versions of Windows, you know, the Windows Mobile, before they changed the name to Windows Phone, Windows Mobile, they made it look like it was, it had a start button just like your desktop computer used to have before they tried to do away with it. In Windows 8, you know, Windows Mobile, it had a start button, and you had programs and so on and so forth, and you even had the DLL files and so on and so forth, just like you'd have on a desktop machine. So it was Windows. You know, this Qualcomm that I have in here, there's an embedded version of Windows in it, and the thing is just painfully, painfully slow and sluggish. It does the job. It does the job of keeping my electronic logs, and it does the job of, you know, enabling me to send and receive messages back and forth through the Qualcomm satellite system. But this thing is just painfully slow and clunky. Just as clunky as it can be. And it does have a start button. you know, it's got a color touch screen, and it's got, you know, like a chiclet style keyboard, but it does have a start button. So, but you can't do much with it, but it's got a start button. They've got, you know, of course, it's embedded Windows, and they've got it pretty well locked down. So, you know, they don't want you tampering with your electronic logs or whatever. But it's just clunky. And so, I don't know. I don't see Microsoft ever, at least to this point, and it's highly doubtful that they'll ever really get what handheld devices really are. You know, what is the appeal? What is the why do people find these handheld devices, iPads, iPods, iPhones, Android phones, why do they find them useful? And I don't think, you know, either Microsoft doesn't get it or they don't want to get it. You know, so it's, I don't know. I don't hold up much hope for them coming out with, you know, coming out with any kind of a tablet or even, you know, and whatever market share they have with the Windows Phone, you know, the limited market share that they have, they're actually buying it, and they're spending a lot of money to do it. You know, they wrote off about almost $1 billion worth of tablets that no one bought. And like $900 million worth of tablets that no one wanted. So, anyway, let me go ahead and play Joel's other comment here. So, once again, here is Joel.
I think you got it right there for the most part. It's not that they can't, you know, it's not that out that Microsoft's not going to go away. It's that I think one of the things that will end up is they'll end up becoming much like IBM. You know, IBM was, or is, a services company very into the enterprise, which, like Microsoft, is in there too. Now, they say they want to be a devices company, but there's only a couple problems with that, is that I think they've gone to the mat far too many times now and left people high and dry. I remember back when I had PDA, that the PDA I had more than a couple times ended up getting left without updates. Kind of a little bit like Android, and not quite near as bad, because at least, you know, it's something that's gonna need a regular replacement anyway. PDAs, you know, you could use them until they die, you know, and they're just at the point that they were at when they stopped being a market. There was no advancement. You know, 400 megahertz ARM X scale was the fastest they had in the pocket PC, and they stagnated quite a while until the smartphones were introduced by Palm and Handspring. You know, the Handspring was the first one with the Treo that came out. And, you know, it just ballooned when Apple brought out the iPhone. Microsoft and Palm were both kind of resting back on their laurels, not doing much. Apple came along, the ba-boom. And then not long after that, Android came along.
Okay, let me interrupt. Now, this, you know, I was talking about this Fast Company, these articles, and what they were talking about in the Apple article in that Fast Company magazine, one of the things that they mentioned was that when the iPhone came out, you know, one of Apple's, their core philosophy is that they're what they want to do more than anything else, they want to put out products that engage people, make sure, apart from everything else, make sure that those products engage people emotionally. And, you know, you do that with, among other things, you do that with good design. And so the iPhone, the original iPhone really it kind of captured people's imagination. and it didn't matter that there was no copy and paste. Remember that? Remember there was no copy and paste function? You know, and there were, it had its shortcomings. You know, they hadn't, you know, they added that later. And it was without copy and paste for quite a while, as I recall. You know, people have kind of forgotten that. But yet the iPhone, look what it did. It really captured people's imagination because it was well designed, and it really connected with people in a way that hadn't been done before. And has Microsoft ever done that? You know, I had a PDA. I don't remember. You know, it was kind of expensive, and I don't even remember what it was called now, but it had a Windows CE. You know, it had this, it didn't even have a color screen. It was like a monochrome LCD, you know, and it did have a built-in modem for whatever that was worth, like a built-in 2400 baud modem, and you could hook a telephone line into it and go online with it, send emails, and even do some rudimentary browsing. But it was a little piece of junk, and you know, and those things. The problem with those PDAs is that they didn't run any apps. You know, and even the apps, it's all, you know, when the iPhone first came out, there were no apps. You know, and you know, of course, then there were web-based apps after it had been around for a little while. You had web-based apps, but there were no apps to run on it. But people liked it anyway. Now, there were apps available, you know, because I had, before that, before the iPhone came out, I had my Windows mobile phone, and those phones had apps. There were different types of apps that were available for it, for those phones, for that platform. You know, and they would do some basic functions. You know, you had FTP apps, and you had even podcast catching apps, and so on and so forth. And, you know, recording apps, and, you know, you could do different things with it. So, but before that, you know, like those PDAs that you mentioned and the Windows CE, they really didn't. They were trying to replicate the desktop, and you can't really do that. A desktop machine or a laptop machine, if you know, it's got its function, and it's going to be a certain size. And you know, if it's smaller than a certain size, it kind of loses that functionality. But if it should be a certain size, you know, as far as the screen goes, and then the keyboard should be a certain size, and then you can make it as thin and light as you possibly can, if you know, as long as the, you know, you keep the screen and the keyboard at least to a certain usable size, and then, you know, it can do what it does. But these other devices, it really is about the apps. And I think, you know, and Apple sort of, you know, after the original iPhone came out, then they, you know, a little while after that, they added apps. Because the market demanded it. And then we had all of the elements necessary for the thing to really explode. Because you had, you know, capacitive touch screen, and, you know, and it was to the point where you had all of the elements present where the modern handheld device could actually emerge. Because before that, we just were sort of playing around the edges of it. So, anyway, let's go ahead and listen to more of Joel's comment.
Again, the boom, you know, another explosion. And Apple actually had competition for a while. They weren't doing much of anything. When you looked at 3, 3GS, they were just marginally better devices. in some cases, and they still kind of, that's the way it is. Apple reminds me a lot of the Palm of old, you know, and they do have their faithful folks, you know, that will always go out and buy those things, but, you know, at some point, some big advance is going to happen, and people are going to say, heck with you, Apple. In fact, we're almost there now. You know, their advance for the latest devices were 64-bit CPU, which, you know, only grognards like myself care about, or the thumbprint reader, you know. Whoop-dee-doo-dah, the thumbprint reader. Didn't we have those on laptops? I know I did 10 years ago. So, it's just my thoughts on Apple. You know, I think that they got a lot of nice stuff in iOS 7, but I'm thinking Android is, you know, where I'll stay for a while. Now, when it comes to other phone operating systems, Windows Phone, you said it right there too, lack of apps. But I think even more, it's some of the stuff, other stuff that's coming along. You know, there's some of my, I'm a Linux guy, and a lot of the Linux guys will get, some of them, I should say, not all of us, but some of them get really excited about Ubuntu Phone. And for myself, I could care less, because there's not going to be any apps support. The app support's just not going to be there. And to be honest, I don't need, you know, a lot of them are like, oh, they want a fully functional X11, blah, blah. I'm like, no. That's not what's needed on a phone or a tablet. You don't need that stuff. It would be nice to have, but you don't need it. You know, and Ubuntu's trying to think about the general user, the general person, and not the grognard, not the geek like myself. And that means they're going to have to go basic. They're not going to want to go for the extremely geeky, because, to be honest, Linux phones, operating systems, you know, they've been trying that, and that's been failing. So, I think that Ubuntu is trying to do it, right, but it's hard for me to get excited about it. Until they can actually produce devices with it on it, it's useless to me. And apps.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. I don't think, you know, it's possible. Anything's possible, I guess. It's possible, I suppose, that some third party could possibly come along and offer up, you know, some sort of a phone or a, you know, a handheld device that could sort of, you know, capture people's imagination again and you know, kind of take over, and kind of disrupt and take over and become popular, more popular than what we have already. That's always possible. Is it likely? Probably not, especially if they're simply trying to replicate what we already have. It's not about the operating system. With the handheld devices, it's not about the operating system. It's about the functionality. It's about the content. And the content is the apps. You know, and it's about, you know, and as it has evolved, it's sort of about the name brand apps. You know, now, you know, you've got your bank. If your bank is worth its salt, then it's going to have apps for Android and iOS. You know, and any, you know, Twitter or Facebook or any of these name brand, household name brands that have apps, they're going to have Android version, they're going to have iOS version. you know, and it can come down to a personal preference. Do you like iOS better or do you like Android better? I have my, you know, I have feet in both camps. I like my iPad, I like my iPod, I like my Nexus, and I like my Galaxy S3. So I like all of them. Would I buy some device that, what would be the advantage of buying a device running this Ubuntu? What could it offer that I don't already have? Remember, it's all about the apps. The operating system, yeah, it should work, and it should just work and sort of get out of the way. And it should, you know, the update should be automatic and so on and so forth. But it's, in the end, it's about the apps. Can it run the apps? Does it do an efficient job of running the apps? Are the apps available for it? And I don't see Microsoft, even though they're spending all this money and trying, you know, making all this effort, I don't see them making any kind of an inroad. If anybody's got a chance, it would be Microsoft to come into this market, you know, this handheld market. They're already in it, in fact. If anybody's got a chance, it would be Microsoft, and Microsoft just doesn't get it. So that, you know, the Ubuntu folks, that's not going to go anywhere. You know, that's dead in the water. You know, it may make, you know, somebody can play with it or whatever, and it may make a geek or two happy, but that's not going to go anywhere. That's dead in the water. That's as dead in the water as, probably even more so than Microsoft is dead in the water when it comes to handheld devices. So, but it's about the apps. The apps on a handheld device, the apps are the content. The apps are the big draw. Because if you take any of these devices, you take any of, take your iPad or your iPod or your iPhone or your a Nexus tablet or the Android tablet of your choice or the Android phone of your choice, cut it off of the network, no apps, what good would it be? But, you know, it could still be a phone. But if you take the apps out of the equation, what good would those devices be? They wouldn't be. You could do a few things here and a few things there, maybe make notes with it or draw little pictures if you had, you know, but no apps, you know, whatever's built into it, what good would it be? The functionality would be, even on an iPad or something like, would be very limited without apps. There'd be no draw. You'd be back, you'd be back on your laptop or your desktop machine. So the apps, these handheld devices, it's all about the apps and putting it right in front of you, and you are able to sort of manipulate them directly with your fingers on the screen. makes it, you know, it puts it in a very distilled, efficient form factor. You know, when it's more efficient, if they, you know, a successful app will take whatever you can do on your desktop computer and sort of disrupt it. And the way it disrupts it, it distills that down to its essence. Those functions down, distills them down to whatever, you know, the essence is. The essences are, and makes it easier to do on. If it's easier, for example, it's easier for me to go to grab my phone and look at my bank account than it is to go on a desktop or a laptop computer and log into the bank account's webpage. If it's easier to do it on my phone, for example, that's a win for the app. That's a well-designed app. That's a useful app. That's a function that I'm willing to pay for a device so that I can have that functionality, have that extra convenience of being able to carry my bank account around in my pocket, in a sense. So, but I don't know. It's an interesting topic, and I think, you know, and it's one we're going to stay focused on because these devices are better than they've ever been, and I think they're what can they do? They can, you know, they can become more powerful. You know, they become ever more powerful computers, and the bandwidth gets better. And as that happens, then it becomes possible to do more things with them. So, anyhow, I need to be cutting this off. Get headed to bed. Hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.